Hello and welcome to this special episode of Teen GP Perspectives, peer-to-peer conversations digging into anything and everything general practice, brought to you by the RCGP Membership Communities and Engagement Team. I'm Alice, and as bonus content for our online exhibition, Women at the Heart of General Practice, today we'll be discussing intersectionality, what it is and what it means to women GPs from our membership communities. Women at the Heart of General Practice uncovers the history and present day experiences of women in medicine and in general practice. The exhibition is split into 8 themes, which you can discover in full on the RCGP website. I'm delighted to have with me 3 GPs who'll be sharing their perspectives on this topic. If you could briefly introduce yourselves and your remits.
Hi Alice, thank you for having me. Thank you Team GP for organising this. I'm Dr. Ayede Ologun. I'm a GP in Manchester. I am the treasurer on the North Faculty board, and I'm also the lead for mid-career GPs in Northwest Faculty.
Hi, I'm Sam. I'm a foundation doctor in the South Thames Deanery, and I'm hoping to become a GP. I've done quite a bit of work in the past working with GP societies and the college and increasing student and foundation doctor engagement, and more recently working with the college on how to be better to our Black GPs.
Hello, my name's Dr. Alia Goyle. I'm a First 5 GP in the West Midlands, and I'm on the Midland Faculty Board as their Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Champion.
Thanks, everyone. And thank you, Ayede and Alia, for joining me in person from the first live RCGP annual conference since 2019 in Liverpool. And Sham, thank you for joining us virtually. Sham and Alia, you've both recorded Perspective podcasts to discuss particular areas of identity. Alia, you spoke on our Being a South Asian GP episode, and Sham, you spoke on our Black Women in Health episode. But today, we're going to be discussing more broadly about identities that make up a whole person and unpicking what the definition of intersectionality means to you. I'm aware some people listening may be unfamiliar with the theory and meaning of intersectionality, which was first introduced by Kimberly Crenshaw in 1989. The top Google definition outlines it as the complex, cumulative way in which the effect of multiple forms of discrimination, such as racism, sexism, and classism, combine, overlap, or intersect, especially in the experience of marginalized individuals or groups. Now, this sounds quite complex, but what does intersectionality actually mean to you?
Thank you. So for me, intersectionality is about our multifaceted identities and the interconnected nature of multiple forms of inequality. And these labels, they don't just impact on the lens through which we see the world, but it's also the way in which the world sees us. And if we just think about individual types of disadvantage, we won't understand the disadvantage experienced by the whole person. So for example, if you were to Google, you know, when did women get the vote in America, it would say 1920. But actually that isn't true for Black women, because they had to wait until the 1960s. And the discrimination experienced by a Black woman is amplified for a Black woman wearing a headscarf or who's in a wheelchair. And so it's really important to look at the whole person who would experience multiple forms of discrimination at the same time.
I think both the Google definition and what Alia just discussed really capture it really well. Just how, you know, sometimes just looking at a person, you don't know all the intersections that they may have, and you may only look at one thing, not realise how much it's amplified by other things that they may have. I think it's important to understand intersections, each individually, and how they complement and distract from each other, and how that will impact the person, the way they work, how they work, who they work with, and their impact. It, obviously, in our field, we discuss, you know, general practice, but how these intersections impact on the patient and colleagues.
Yeah, I'm going to echo their answers too. In terms of intersectionality to me, it's what makes me different, what makes me unique, characteristics and traits that makes me me. It's the interconnected nature of me based on my race, my gender, my nationality that sometimes overlaps or independent of this system, and this can lead to discrimination or give me more disadvantage. And looking at my intersections, I am Black, I am an AMG, I am a woman in health, I speak non-British English. I have overlapping intersections, and it's important for others to understand the complexity of prejudice that can be faced due to the overlapping of these intersections. often people don't understand how you feel. They might have an idea of how you feel, which can be gaslighting, but it's not usually the reality. And we must recognize the experiences of intersectionality, especially when they are multiple, because these are all unique.
That brings us quite nicely onto our second question, which is intersectionality actually important?
I think intersectionality is vital, and it really does move the conversation along around how people are feeling in terms of the discrimination that they experience. As Ayeti's already mentioned, not all discrimination is intersectional because not all of it is visible. So, for example, people may not know what someone's gender or sexuality is. They may not know if they suffer from chronic health conditions. And it's really important, both for our interactions with colleagues as well as our interactions with patients. I do think it's being increasingly recognised and researched, such as through various reports that have come out. And it's really interesting to see that, you know, the various surveys that have come out, the NHS staff survey has shown that discrimination is also kind of a religious discrimination as well. The largest group that experiences the most religious discrimination in the NHS are Muslim. So all these disadvantages and discriminations, it increases our vulnerability and it can limit our opportunities in work. So I think we do need to reflect on how we ensure colleagues are included and welcomed and how we respond to them. Because the intersectionality is a really important part of our identity and it's more than just gender or race.
Sham, do you want to come in on that? There were some really interesting topics about hidden intersectionality.
I wanted to know if you guys thought that. Do you think it's, you know, powerful for someone to reveal their hidden intersections, for example? So, you know, hidden disabilities, hidden chronic conditions. Do you think that will enable people to understand them better and then, you know, work with these intersections to improve things for, you know, the person themselves, the patients, the colleagues? Or is it more comfortable for everybody if these remain hidden?
Hidden intersectionality is very important, and if we understand the meaning of intersectionality, we'll be able to not project a lot of what we think people should feel or what we think they are, because we know that we don't know everything about that person. So if we understand the interconnected nature of our race, our nationality, sex, characteristics, this will help us understand diversity well, that everyone is diverse, not just with their race, with who they are, with who they think they are, different things, and that will make us understand and be more, have the culture to be more inclusive for everyone. And because it's important to understand that everyone occupies a very important space in this world and they have something different to bring to the table. So if we understand that, whether we can see what they are, whatever intersectionality we can see and the hidden one, once we understand the background and the basis of it, it will help us understand diversity and inclusion well.
So I think the question of whether or not we should reveal our hidden intersections is actually quite interesting. Mm-hmm. For someone such as myself, who is visibly female, Asian, Muslim, and slightly older than the normal kind of first five qualified GP, to kind of verbally talk about my other intersections not only makes me more vulnerable, but it also gives an opportunity for people to actually discriminate against me further. And sometimes it can be a bit of a difficulty to kind of make that decision. I think everyone has to make the decision that's right for them. And when you're already feeling like you're at a disadvantage, to give somebody else another reason to disadvantage against you. So, for example, I'm thinking of health in particular, the challenges that I face, which I know we're going to talk about later when training. Some of those challenges I didn't necessarily say out loud because sometimes it comes with an element of judgment. And unfortunately, we have found that doctors with chronic health conditions or doctors who may have problems with their mental health can often find that they are discriminated against or seen as lesser.
So for me, I guess one of my intersections is I'm from a, you know, working class poor family, and medicine is so elitist, and coming into medicine from that background, people can probably tell from where I sound, very South London, but you know, when you have to be in spaces with people who do look at you as less than in certain spaces. And for me now, feeling it, although it's kind of I think people now understand stepping the ways that I do and the relationship of what everyone was thinking in terms of revealing things that make them more vulnerable, really.
So can you discuss your intersections and how they might have influenced or impacted your life?
I think I can only really be understood through my intersections, which have massively impacted on my life and who I am. So growing up in a patriarchal South Asian community, it's not unusual for girls to feel kind of less important than boys who were given a lot of privilege that I never was. And then on top of those kind of experiences from people who are outside of my community, it gave me this really strong sense of justice. And this sense of justice is something that I have very much taken on in my GP career in terms of my direction after I completed training, which is why I work a lot amongst people who are excluded from healthcare, and I'm very interested in inclusion health, and of course my role on the Midland Faculty Board around equality, diversity and inclusion. In terms of my own training experience, I trained in the West Midlands, and although around 40% of the population is of South Asian heritage, I saw a lot of micro and macro aggression towards particularly Asian women patients, and the impact of my own patient experience, because I do suffer from chronic health conditions myself. It makes me a very vocal advocate when I see this, and that led to me writing a viewpoint article for the British Journal of General Practice Open Edition last year on race and racism. And training was really interesting. So I trained as a really mature trainee, and because of I had lots of life experience, I wasn't really afraid to speak up when I felt I was being taken advantage of or if I felt there was some injustice. And it's quite difficult to walk that tightrope where the educators that you have are younger than you and who may not appreciate the life experience that you bring. A lot of my challenges were around my health because of the fact that other trainees wanted explanations as to why I was excused from certain shifts. But it was really none of their business. And it was one of those things that I kind of had to hold on to for myself in order to be able to advance in my career, because again, there was always this fear of judgment. But I think that through challenges, we do become stronger. And I was very fortunate that I had plenty of peer colleagues who were able to support me. And of course, the support of my faculty board was really instrumental in terms of me getting through.
Everyone knows that I'm a black woman, and I talk about that passionately in every aspect of my working life and at uni as well. And being from a working class family, which I previously just briefly mentioned, and being a female, I'm not supposed to be a doctor. I've been told that so many times just because of all my intersections. And the fact that I am, I think, empowers me to be the best that I can be for myself and for my patients. So yeah, as Alia was saying, my intersections make me, and I think for me, they make me better.
I would say my intersections has impacted me in many different ways. My intersections do complement me. It makes me unique and who I am. It's the foundation and continuation of my values and convictions. My intersections being a black woman, a woman, an IMG speaking with a non-British accent has caused me to have a higher degree of discrimination in few situations. I'll give you a story. When I was a junior doctor in my first year, I was sitting at the nursing station doing some notes, and I could hear some distance, not much behind me, two nurses having a conversation. And one said, oh, I need a junior doctor to quickly do this for me. And the other nurse said, oh, there's a junior doctor down there. And she said, no, I want a real trained doctor that speaks English. At that point, I did feel devalued, belittled, demoralized at that moment. I did just complete my work and I left that station. And looking back at that time, I did have a high degree of resilience then, because I didn't say anything at that moment. I just went back to work cheerfully and happily the next day. But I did learn a few things from that. Now it's different, and over the years it has been different. I have learned to speak out and speak loud against any form of prejudice and discrimination. But my intersections, I think I learned how to embrace them. They are unique to me, and it's what I tell women, to always embrace their authenticity and project positively who they are. Because the way you are, the way you feel about yourself is perceived in the way others treat you.
So it's interesting, with the last year of the pandemic, a lot of what we've done has been remote. We've had a massive movement, as you know, to telephone consultations as a primary consultation before bringing people in face to face. And of course, I was born in the UK. I was trained in the UK. So, of course, my intersections are different to you, Ayedi. However, on the phone, people can't see me. So they can't tell what I look like. And often when I've spoken to a patient and I've said, oh, you know, I think you need to come in to see me. So I will call the patient in and I'll go into the waiting room and I'll say, Mrs. So-and-so, you know, ready to hear you now. And you do see that momentary look on a patient's face when they realise that I was the person that they spoke to, because what they envisage in their head from my voice doesn't bear out when they actually see me. And that's been really interesting. So in some ways, for me, the remote consultations have actually allowed me to overcome some of my intersections because people aren't seeing who I am. But it's definitely been quite an interesting experiment for me for when people do come in face to face.
I think Sham mentioned earlier about keeping hidden intersections hidden. Do you feel like in remote consultations has removed that visible intersection?
The reason why I found it interesting is because it really made me think about how sometimes when we are spoken to a certain way or treated a certain way by patients, we wonder if it's because of how we look when we're dealing with people face to face. And I can definitely say that it's not in my head. It's not something that I am carrying with me without, because although this is all anecdotal evidence, I've definitely seen a shift from how I'm perceived. And so I know it almost validates the feelings that I have, because sometimes when you do have intersections and you're treated in a discriminatory manner, other people can't see that. And you sometimes wonder, it's exactly what you were saying before, Ayedi, about gaslighting and people not validating your experiences. And yet I feel that I actually have validated it by this experiment of the pandemic.
I am all for, and everyone knows me, about authenticity and being unapologetically yourself. I think that in this life, when you show up as who you are, yes, it might be vulnerable. Yes, it is different. Yes, it is you putting out all about you. But there is no any other way to do it, because like Oscar Wilde says, be yourself, everyone else is taken. The best person you can be is yourself, and you can do that beautifully and better than anyone. And anything else you're doing, you're basically an imposter. So I'm always like, when you show unapologetically, if you like me, that's okay. If you don't like me, that's also okay. You just move on. And I think self-awareness comes out bigly into everything. Self-awareness, self-actualization. When you know who you are and you embrace all your intersection and you project it beautifully, you embrace your values and convictions, and you can declare that brilliantly everywhere you are, it's just everyone will just have to pick up on it and move on. I feel all the other stuff we might do, intersections, discriminations, sometimes can be distractions from us becoming our best selves. And I would advocate telling people to learn how to embrace their intersections, their infirmities, whatever they think it makes them different, because those are the things that make you unique. We're all different and we all have very different things to bring to this world. I mean, scientists did a study many, many years ago. What's the chance and characteristics of someone being like you? There's 1 in 400 trillion chances. So it means we're all unique. We should all be standing on the stage telling people what to do. So we're all different. And that's what I just wanted to put that in.
Sham, I'm just echoing what you mentioned earlier. You know, you've been unapologetically a Black trainee throughout your medical career, and people are telling you shouldn't be there. That's pretty much what you've been echoing this whole time, and you're at a different career stage, and I just want to pick up on that. Do you find when you're younger it takes a little bit more time to come into that, or have you found yourself always being authentic to yourself?
I think definitely, like, when I was starting medical school, like, on the first, leading up to the first day, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not gonna, you know anyone like me, no one's gonna be like me, this is gonna be very strange. And when I first went in, I kind of went in with a, you know, just what I expect. I try to act what I expected everyone wanted me to act like. But eventually I did find my people. I found people not just like me. I mean, they don't all look like me. They're not all where I'm from, but people that understand my intersectionalities and embrace them. And that helped me to be unapologetically me, really. So I think having good allies and people around you that embrace all of you is really important as well.
I suppose this leads us to the last question, which is, how have you navigated personal and professional obstacles which may have been related to your intersection?
So I think, echoing what Ayedian and Sham have said, I think it all starts with a mindset shift. So I made a conscious choice not to feel limited. So for people who know a little bit about my story, I left the NHS for 15 years. I came back in to the NHS. And after a year of kind of getting my head back in the game, I started GP training, which is why I completed my training last year as a mature GP. And Michelle Obama said, you should never view your challenges as a disadvantage. It's important for you to understand that your experiences facing and overcoming adversity is actually one of your biggest advantages. So after the mindset shift, exactly what Sham said, it's important to kind of find your people, build your network, find your tribe, connect with people who have similar understanding of what you've been through, if only so that you don't feel so alone. So part of my journey was to join with organisations to give us a collective voice as well, to gain influence and educate others on a wider scale. So I'm part of several networks as well, including the British Islamic Medical Association and groups of NHS Muslim women. And I've embraced my intersections by being, or at least trying to be, a visible role model by mentoring and coaching sixth formers to get into medical school, medical students and GP trainees. And I do that in my role as an EDI champion for Midland faculty as well, because I recognise that other people have similar challenges to the challenges that I've experienced. And I want to provide that support for them. And I've taken that into a new role as a training programme director. So I think we've all got our voices, and I think we can use them positively, because this is really about how we can positively impact our environment, and we can bring our shared experiences to help to make it, the future better for everybody else.
Yeah, so it's really interesting to hear all of the sort of pies that Alia has her fingers in, because that's kind of what I want to be for people, making them to feel more empowered about their intersectionalities in the future going forward. So I do a lot of work for medical students as well. My friend and I set up the African and Caribbean Medical Society at King's when we were there a few years ago, and that has really blown up, and that society has done so much work in that round. And having seniors that also stick up for you. So I've had a lot of issues with like microaggressions in the past, but I've recently moved to Kent for my S2 training, and I had my first sort of experience of like overt racist comment. A patient, we were on the ward round, my consultant's an elderly white gentleman, as a few of them are, and a patient said, "Old nurse," referring to me, and the consultant said, no, she's a doctor, and the patient said, "Oh, they come in all kinds of colours these days, don't they?" And my consultant stood up for me. At that moment, although I'm so empowered day to day, that was the first time I experienced that, and I didn't have a response at the time, but my consultant stood up for me. And, you know, I don't know all of his intersections, but outwardly, this is a white man who's a doctor, so he's, you know, seen as superior to many people, and him speaking out for me was really important to me, and I think will help me to empower myself in the future. I just need to keep working on myself, and although I feel empowered, there's probably some insecurities that may come into play on a day-to-day. So that's where I see the future.
Can I ask you a question? Do you feel that when we have all these intersections, do you feel that the area that we work in, that we choose the area that we work in based on our intersections, and therefore we stay away from areas where there are populations that don't reflect us because of fear of these kind of views? So geographically, so thinking about what Sham's just said about working in Kent, yeah, which I don't personally know very well, but I would associate it with being a non-diverse area, and thinking about myself, I'm working currently in an area where there's a 90% ethnic minority population. So I'm just wondering if we consciously or subconsciously choose the geographical areas we work in and those populations based on ourselves. What do you think?
Personally, I never did. Obviously, embracing my intercession and getting to know myself, has been a journey. So even in my early career, it was just where I could get training. So I never chose, and specifically, right now I choose where I work based on patient safety and in connections and interactions, and if I'm developing, if I've got career progression there. So I've never had to choose where I work, but I can see where that can happen for many people. And this is where people stay in their comfort zone and they just want to just have an easier. And I you can't really blame them. Everyone is on a different length of journey. People are developing at different rates and different ways. So some people do choose. It can happen. Yes, for mental health and peace of mind, sometimes I would encourage staying somewhere where you feel valued, where you feel listened to, where you feel important and happy.
From an IMG perspective, something that came up there with a lot of IMGs, that they might not even be aware of these cultural issues which would come up. Do you have any ideas or advice or thoughts about that?
Yes. Just as what I'm saying, and I would add in what they said, networking, connection and building relationships is very important for anyone. You can go far as a person, but you can go much further with people. You can do many things in this world with people. If you're going to run for a presidential post or something, you need people to vote for you. So you need people for many aspects in your life. So my advice for them would be get in contact with network. We have many different networks for IMGs. There is the BMA, there is Nigerian Doctors in UK, there is Somalian Doctors, there are other diverse groups, there's Black Women in Health. And these groups are meant to provide information, empower you and help you. Whatever you think you're going through as a new IMG trainee, there is a high percentage, 90 or 100% chance someone else has actually gone through that problem. And you can tap into advice, mentoring and stuff from other trainees and really senior doctors that have been through that. So my advice will always be start with networking. And you can get resources on self-development, on career development, and so many things that will help you foster and become a really great and good doctor in the UK.
And Sham, just coming back to your experience, does that make you feel hesitant about moving away from a diverse area?
Oh my gosh, definitely. Like before, I felt like, oh yeah, I can work anywhere. And now I'm a bit like, ooh, do I want to work with patients that may not appreciate me because of what they can see rather than what I can do for them? And it's a big difference because last year in my F1 year, I worked in a central London hospital, like near where I'm from, and it was so diverse in terms of the patient population. But actually, the clinical staff were less diverse. And now, in the opposite way, in Kent, the actual clinical staff are actually more a diverse population, and the patient population is not as diverse. So it's hard because when you're working in a place like Kent where the clinical staff look like you and you can get, you know, mentors that look like you have been through experiences that you've been through, that's quite beneficial. But it's, you know, do you pass that off for getting racist comments or abuse by patients? It's tricky. It's really hard because I would love to stay in a place where I could, you know, be mentored by someone that's been through the same things as me. And I think that would make me a better doctor clinically. But then off the foot of that, the mental health side of it being, you know, abused by patients may offset that. It's really hard to say. I think, so when I'm applying, I'm intending to go back to South London if I can, but we'll have to see.
It's a really interesting question because a lot of our communities, so I mean our ethnically diverse communities, and speaking for myself from the South Asian community, they bring their own challenges. Of, I would say, intergenerational trauma, the challenges of the areas in which they work, deprivation. We know how hard hit our communities were because of COVID-19. And so it's really interesting. I've had so many conversations with doctors who look like me, who are of South Asian background, who actually don't want to work in South Asian communities because of the challenges, because of the fact that they also want to career progress and not feel the burden of being the role model or being the person that the communities come to because the community identifies with them. I think it's very much a decision everyone has to make for themselves because you need to be able to thrive in whatever environment that is. And speaking for myself, even if I was to leave where I am currently, at least I know I will have tried or made an impact on the community that I care about.
Yeah, I do agree. Yeah. It's all personal. Like when you look at your journey and what you want to do and how you want to do it, I'm always for people writing down their goals and their goals linking with their values. So what do you want to do in 5 years? What do you want? What kind of environment? What kind of experiences? What kind of feelings do you want to have? And make sure you tailor what you're doing next to that. People are likely to do what they come up with themselves rather than someone telling them you should do it. So I'm all for writing down what you want to do. And if what you're going to do is not leading you to where you want to be in terms of career, in terms of family life, because when we look at the facets of life, career is just one of it. There are other areas of life you want to prosper, family life, personal life, relationships, love relationships, socializing, community contribution. So you want to see what you're doing right now. Is it leading you to that? Are you just linking with wasted years or wasted time? So you want to link all that. So I'm for, as Aliyah said, doing something where you're happy, where you're progressing. Because the truth is that in life, you have to be moving forward. If you're not growing, you're dying, basically. So yeah, it might take a break for a day. I don't mean you should be growing every day, not everyday stuff, but you should be leading somewhere. You should be going somewhere, because that's what makes you live a more fulfilled and balanced life.
We're obviously coming to the end of the podcast at the moment. I'd just like to invite any of you to come up with any final thoughts as we wrap up.
Thank you. So intersectionality, vitally important. We're currently in Black History Month, and I've been thinking a lot about Black history as well, and how it actually overlaps with my intersections. So a lot of my Black patients are Muslim, and a lot of my female Black patients wear headscarves. And I've been reflecting a lot on where is the space for them in Black History Month, not just through the output of the RCGP, but in terms of, you know, the general output that I've seen. So I think that we are definitely moving forward. There's still a lot of work to be done. And I feel that people are starting to develop their voices and show the richness of the community that we have in general practice. And I think that can only be a good thing.
Yeah. This also links, my final words will link with the last question about overcoming challenges of intersection. And this is basically on my experience. I've learned, and I'll tell anyone dealing with embracing and overcoming intersections, that knowing and embracing who you are, building confidence, understanding my limitations has helped me, and being committed to improving my strengths has helped me to get to my, or on the way to my highest potential, and to help me give the best for myself and others. And I think that this awareness has led me to understand the power of my voice and the need to speak up about my experience. And this led me to be the co-founder for Black Women in Health and enabled me to grow personally and professionally. And I love to help others to find their voice and change the mindset and the narrative. So anyone going through any form of challenges, I feel that they should link up, try and understand who they are, try and build up who they are, so that they can really overcome this and move on to another stage of their lives.
I'm really thankful that we got to have this conversation. I feel really empowered by the two of you. I feel like I've had a talking to from my young aunties telling me how to be better, be me, authentically me. And I think everyone will be able to take home that message going forward.
Amazing. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining me for the recording of this Perspectives podcast. Sham, I know you'll be joining us later at the Inspire Awards, which are taking place at RCGP Annual Conference in Liverpool. Thank you for listening today. We hope that this has been a really insightful episode for you, and you've taken away some really important things that my guests have said. If you have any questions, please email us at membershipcommunities@rcgp.org.uk, or if you'd like to be involved or have a topic you'd like to cover for a Perspectives podcast, do get in touch. We obviously want to make sure that our steering groups for all of these activities are as diverse as possible.